Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy had started to get in the details of risotto cookery in the first segment. So, do you have a favorite type of risotto?
I do. I love to make fresh artichoke risotto. Well, actually, there are a million. I love to make Barolo risotto, making it with a bottle of red wine. I do equal parts red wine and stock, and that just has onion shallot and Reggiano cheese.
So the exact same process. You're just changing what it is. The whole ballgame in the risotto is what is the quality of the rice and what is the quality of the liquid
that
and
its
flavor that's absorbing.
Exactly. And when I make artichoke risotto, I use a very light chicken stock, but I also use predominantly the poaching liquid that we cook the fresh artichokes in. And that has so much flavor because it had mirepoix, it had fresh lemon juice, it had a lot of olive oil in it, and that broth is just so delicious. So when I
And make, all the flavor of the artichokes.
Yeah, exactly. And then I actually put fresh artichokes in at the end. And of course, artichokes love lemon and love Reggiano. So it's the perfect risotto. And I've been serving that lately with, we were getting chicken breasts from this amazing farm in New York that they're getting, these chickens are getting the best life ever. They're getting all these scraps from these great New York chefs.
You're buying like spa raised chickens from New York?
Yeah, but in a, yes, I guess I am. But anyway, so that artichoke risotto with chicken is so good. But I've also served it with duck breast. So risotto. I mean, and I love saffron risotto as well. See, I could keep going on. I love to make rice. And, you know, if we want to talk about a different type of rice. Let's talk about an Italian food.
Well, talk about how rice gets used. Right.
When do you eat the risotto in an Italian menu in Italy?
Because people, I mean, risotto is about as, antipasti means before pasta, right? Before starch.
Mm-hmm.
You would have something small, piquant, spicy, zesty, bright, a little fatty, garlic. You know, something that has like a real pop to it, a lot of personality.
For the antipasto.
But for antipasti, but not filling in any way. It makes you want that starch course.
Okay.
If that starch course is too big, you know, if that risotto bowl is giant, you're never, ever going to have any appetite remaining for what usually is a... You know, your secundi is usually a protein of some sort, a fish, a meat, a bird, a game. It may even be a cheese, but it's a protein that you have after that. You have to size it so that you don't...
The risotto.
Yeah, and the point is, let's say you're doing a garnish, if you're doing the artichokes, you know, how is that going to sequence with the flavors of the garnishes for the protein after that? There's something of an elegant rhythm of the three courses if they're done correctly. It's not... And you're meant to be... One of the cool things about risotto or a pasta as a course is it changes your rhythm at the table for the diners. I think that's one of my favorite things about dining in Italy is because it's not just, oh, it takes so long to eat it, but you're given no choice but to relax and to socialize, and your perspective is shifted every course.
Mm-hmm.
And you're receptive to each course as it comes, and that's a...
It's a good way to live.
A pleasant way to live.
Well, one of my other favorite risottos, of course, is truffle. So how could I not mention that? I mean, I love making truffle risotto. And I will tell you as a hint for cooking it that I do add, unlike when I make soup, truffle soup, I do add, when I make risotto, I add some truffle halfway through and then I finish it also with chopped truffle. So it gets it sort of in the middle because that rice is absorbing that flavor. And then some at the end, so it's really bright and really there. And then, of course, if you can afford to, then you slice truffle on top as well. And that's just a beautiful way. And that's how I serve it, with rice, with truffle in the risotto process and also sliced on top.
So let's get out of European rice.
Okay.
For just a minute.
Let's go to the south.
Well, okay. So yeah. Go for it. What's your favorite down there? What do they grow?
Well, first of all, now we're talking about if you actually use rice, long grain rice from South Carolina, it's a very different cooking process. There are a couple of different ways to do it. You could either do 2-to-1, so ratio where you have boiling water, you add the rice, you pop a lid on it, and then you let it sit. You drain, and at some point you drain that liquid off. Or you do the method where you just let it sit and steam and everything separates. That rice is really complicated. If you don't know what you're doing, the whole idea is of that southern long grain rice is that every piece is individual. You can also cook it in a large amount of liquid and drain off the liquid as well and put the lid back on the pot and let it steam. That's also ties into Persian rice.
But you're trying to make it as like fluffy and separate and almost dry as it can be.
But when I make, I almost...
Without being crunchy in any way, right?
Right. Correct. But when I, quite honestly, when I make rice at the restaurant, I use Uncle Ben's rice, okay? I don't always use Carolina Gold. If I say I'm using Carolina Gold, of course I am. But I rarely work with that anymore. Well,
Carolina Gold is short grain rice from South Carolina, right?
Right, right.
The opposite animal.
Exactly. So when I make just regular, and that's why I want to talk about it, because it's what you would buy at the grocery store, is Uncle Ben's rice. That idea of cooking is, again, you're absorbing flavor. So you're sauteing an onion and butter. You're adding the rice. You're coating the rice for just 1 second, or, well, 30 seconds, and then you're adding your liquid. Your liquid should be 2 fingers level above the rice. So if I'm, again, adding chicken stock, just that, what is that, an inch above the level of the rice, I bring it up to a boil, I pop a lid on it, sit it on the back of the stove, turn off the heat, end of story, it's perfect. And that way, that's something that you can then take it out of the pot, put it into an open pan that where it can cool down really quickly, a sheet pan, we call them hotel pans, cool it down quickly, and then you have room to heat that rice up for your family later. Or if you just want to make it, knead it, add a little bit more liquid than that. And, you know, Hoppin' John is one of my favorite rices, so you would cook black eyed peas in a bacon stock and add that to the rice once it gets going in the pot. And that liquid would become your liquid, and that's what Hoppin' John is. It's one of the basic perlos. It's a one-pot dish where your rice absorbs that wonderful black eyed pea broth that had that bacon flavor and probably chicken stock in it and like Tabasco. And then another very simple rice, which actually... reading in the Carolina Rice Kitchen, which is one of the most amazing books to learn about rice. And I mean, you want to learn everything about rice. It's Karen Hess's book. I highly suggest it. I realize now that on the west coast of Africa, there was a type of red rice. But in the south, we make red rice as a dish, which means it has tomato product in it. And I think it just has origins in African cooking. So red rice is very simply a little bacon, a little onion, water, and then tomato paste. Or tomato puree, either way. You could go either way. Or you could put fresh tomato in there, but I would just use tomato paste. And I always put Tabasco in that. So red rice, Hoppin' John, these are all very traditional southern rices.
What about rice in Louisiana? Is that something that finishes?
Well, see, that's the difference. You know, you talk about jambalaya. Again, jambalaya is a very, very old idea of cooking with shellfish.
That comes from Spanish.
I was going to say it's not actually from where we think it is.
Yeah,
exactly. It's from Spain.
There's much more. It's funny because Louisiana is a French territory, and colonially, but there's an awful lot more Spanish influence than you ever think.
Exactly. And that's that jambalaya dish is, again, sort of that one-pot dish, that idea that rice is going to absorb that amazing flavor of that shellfish. You're going to get a stock. You're going to get stock from your shellfish, or you're going to create flavor by adding the shellfish at the end of the cooking process, which then brings us to paella.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the antecedent for jambalaya would be paella. I mean, really much, and it's not, even though the rice is similar to arborio rice, the great rice in Spain. Now, the great rice in Spain, no, it's funny. Everyone hears arborio rice here and knows about it. I think that, and we always talk about Spanish cooking never gets the credit or the thought, the place in the mind, the place in the heart in the States. Real Spanish cooking. I'm not just cliche Spanish cooking.
Mm-hmm.
The rice, the DO rice, the regulated rice, special short grain in Spain is calaspara, from calaspara. And you prefer that to the risotto rice, the arborio, do you not?
I do.
It's almost like a nuttier, sharper flavor.
It has a really, yes. And that's another reason why I like basmati rice. I mean, I always am searching out that great basmati rice that has that beautiful nutty flavor, because it's just the perfume. When you open the bag, it's one of the most beautiful smells naturally occurring in the food. One of the things you have to watch out about when you're buying basmati rice is that they often pack it in burlap, and that just becomes, to me, it's like oily, it's overpowering, it can actually take over the perfume of the rice. So I won't buy basmati if it's in a burlap bag, and that is often how it's sold. So I look for something that's packed in paper, plastic, or foil, or whatever it is. Let's get back to Spain and paella and the origins of paella, which means pan.
It literally... You're looking at a big open pan, and the most traditional way to make it is over vine cuttings in the field. I mean, that's something that where you have you're close to the water, and you're also close to the field. You couldn't grow anything, and Spain is dry. You couldn't grow a whole lot of produce anywhere but near some water. So almost always there's some kind of seafood element in the dish. But you're looking at a big open pan that has stock or water, mm-hmm. or maybe you have you put pork product or something in the pan with water and let it develop and keep adding water all day long, mm-hmm. from the stream, and get that fire going on the vine cuttings.
I love that.
And then you slowly add produce. you slowly add whatever it is that you're picking.
And whatever meats might have been near the field.
Exactly right.
So you would have chicken or rabbits or snails were a big thing that they put in.
That's funny. My favorite, a lot of people's favorite sort of famous rice in Spain, there's a restaurant called Paco mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere in Humidia that is famous for doing a rice with rabbits. And the rabbits are cooked over the wood fire first.
Oh, sounds so good.
Right? They're like stuffed with garlic and cooked over the wood fire on a string over a slow fire the day before. Then they're pulled apart. And that is the beginning of the paella. And the paella is finished with these little tiny snails. And the snails are gathered around rosemary plants. Mm-hmm. And so they have a rosemary flavor. It's a crazy thing.
Great.
And the rice is simply rice, water, the rabbit, and the snails.
I'm sure it's astonishing.
It is cooked in a super giant, super shallow pan mm-hmm. until it is tiny bit crispy on top, tiny bit crispy on the bottom, over roaring wood fires, from the vine cuttings, still there in that they use in that restaurant. It takes two people to spin this giant thing, and it happens pretty quickly. It's only about a 20-minute process.
Because it's so shallow.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going quick, but instead of risotto where it gets stirred, it's not. They'll spin it until everything kind of settles. It's probably 3-4 minutes where they'll actually stir it and move it. And once it's in process, they just keep spinning it over the fire to keep the cooking even. And then take it off and actually let it cool for a minute or two so the crust sets. And then you just break at it with a fork. And the famous lemons from that area, the Humilla, are bigger than your fist. And maybe more like the size of an orange. And almost like a Meyer lemon, sweet. And the peel is really, really, really oily and aromatic. And they're always squeezing that over that rice to serve it.
It's just a fantastic,
remarkable thing.
Yeah, love to see that process. Well, and you also think of, you see all these pictures of the villages where they make this gigantic. I would love to see the rice that
feeds the village. I've done rice in pans for 70 people, but I've never done rice in a pan that big.
Yeah. A village.
The one for 70 people, you put it on a 5-foot-long grill, Mm-hmm. And can cook it on that.
Yeah, that's definitely that difference with paella, is that idea that it's shallow in the pan. It is a specific pan and that crispy aspect.
Yeah, instead of being like as tender and as creamy as it can be.
You
get a little bit of a contrast. It's somewhere mm-hmm. in between there.
And it's interesting since it's basically the same. It is the same type of rice.
Yeah.
Fascinating cultural difference.
Chasing different differences. Things. And there's essentially no fat. The only fat in the rice
olive oil. Right?
Olive oil to finish if you want.
Okay.
Like that's one of those things that...
Well, and saffron is a big ingredient, isn't it?
A lot of different
it's
rices.
It's pretty important.
If there's a holy grail rice for a lot of Spaniards, it's black rice, which is made with the ink from cuttlefish or from calamari and all the seafood, but especially whatever the ink came from. Mm-hmm. Lots of that as a garnish in the rice or just finishing, just cut up and finishing in the rice.
And to have it there, it is absolutely one of the best things I've ever eaten.
Well, it's a particular thing with that kind of rice, with that Kalispara rice being a little bit nutty and the brininess of the ink and the sort of odd sweetness of the cephalopods. There's a very particular little contrast there that is an ancient thing. It's a huge black pan of
mm-hmm.
rice.
Mm-hmm. And it's just so good. I've had it sometimes in the United States where I just, I'm like, no, this is not. And then when you go there, that's it. You're like, it's their product. It's their seafood.
It's right out of the water.
And it's so fresh. That's the amazing thing about Spain. The seafood, oh my goodness. I've never had seafood that was so good.
Well, when we get Pepe Reventos on, we'll grill them about
it. All right, we'll talk about
seafood in Spain
it.
A little bit.
Sounds good.
So, real quick, basmati rice and jasmine rice, mm. right? The two
basmati.
Aromatic ones. Do you prefer basmati?
I do. I just love it. And, there's a Persian. My brother-in-law is from Iran, and so my sister has really, really learned how to cook Persian dishes from his mother and from books. And there's a recipe for very simple rice that they make that has tadik on the bottom. And, oh, gosh, that's just simply...
Tadik?
Tadik. You make the crispy rice on the bottom of the pot. And, I think I think Persians live for this, and I understand. I mean, I live for this. It when I'm there, I'm like, please make it, Julia.
So it's like crunchy rice and fat.
Yes.
Rice.
So once you make
rice
the
chips.
Rice, right. So when you make basmati, you're in a large amount of liquid. Well, first of all, you have to soak it first. So the rice needs that soaking in order for it to do its job. You've got to soak it first, and you've got to wash it first. Basmati rice has a high starch content. In this case, unlike risotto, you want to lose the starch. So you rinse it, and then you could even leave it in the refrigerator overnight with twice as much water as rice in the container. And then the next day, you put a pot on with probably four times as much liquid as rice. Whatever you want to cook it in, I tend to cook it in salt and saffron. But if you're going to make just traditional rice, it's just water and salt. You drain your rice of that liquid that it was soaking in. You put it into the pot. You cook it about 5 to 6 minutes. You drain it again. And now you're going to make the tariq. And so you put a lot of oil in the bottom of the pan, maybe a quarter of an inch, half an inch of oil. And you want something that's neutral, like corn oil. And now you need a pot with a lid on that fits well. And also, you're going to have to wrap a towel around that lid because you need that kitchen towel to absorb all that steam from the rice. So you put the oil in the pan. You get it somewhat hot. You put the rice in. You build a pyramid. You just keep spooning the rice in. You build it up like a pyramid in the pot. Then you take a wooden spoon. You poke a couple holes in that rice so that the steam can absorb and, or excuse me, so the steam can evaporate out, and we will go into that cloth. You put the lid on and you let it sit for like 20 minutes, and you end up with this really perfect rice that's very, very lovely and separate, but on the bottom is this like golden crust that is just, oh my gosh, it's so good, and it's super crunchy and fun to eat.
We may have to post a video of you in this architectural process, just because
it's
recording
it,
you've been waving your arms around recording it
the
entire
microphone.
Time. All right, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have Pepe Reventos with us from San Sidonia, Spain.